Oh, we can't hear you, Donna.
Sorry about that. Okay, so I'll call this meeting to order at 10:02 a.m. The first item up on the agenda is obviously not ready this morning.
All good.
Approval of the minutes from July 21st.
We'll actually need to do our roll call vote
Oh, thank you.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Why do
You're
I keep
fine.
forgetting this? Please do a roll call vote. Thank you, Jason.
Okay. Donna Shaw.
Yes.
Gwen Bumpers.
Here.
Emily Drone. Lauren Irwin.
Here.
Shauna Mackey.
Here.
Jacob Pate.
Here.
Rachel Stewart.
Here.
Jane Zirkel. Okay. Thought I saw her.
She's typed into the chat here.
Okay, perfect. And then Carol Zeiss.
Here.
All right. Thank you.
Okay, next up on the agenda is the approval of the minutes from the July 21st meeting. Does anybody have any corrections or additions? Hearing nothing, I'll entertain a motion to approve those minutes.
This is Lauren. Motion to approve the minutes.
Thank you. And a second?
I'll second.
Thank you, Rachel. Roll call vote.
Donna?
Yes.
Gwen?
Yes.
Lauren?
Yes.
Shauna?
Yes.
Jacob?
Yes.
Rachel?
Yes.
Jane? Okay. And Carol?
Yes.
All right. Do we have a share update?
Sure. As we are in the process of working on Aspen, we're going through the trainings right now on this administration side, and it is a lot of information that will be broken down to much smaller and easier segments for our first cohort going live later this fall. Be on the lookout for any updates, dates, things like that. They'll be coming out soon. And then I will go ahead and do some bibliographic services updates, and Jace, please fill in after me if I've missed anything on the share side.
Absolutely.
All right, thank you. So we have updated the cataloging checklist, and we now have checklists for video games and preloaded audio recordings. Those are all on the share website. If you do come across any errors or anything that you're not sure about or have questions, feel free to reach out. We are more than happy to take a look, make sure we haven't missed something as well. We are also working on micro checklists for specific situations as we get requests. We had a request for large print Christian romance, and we are working on that one right now. So if you have anything really specific that you would like some help with or just a checklist as you're cataloging, let us know. We'd be happy to put that together. Almost 300 individuals have completed barcoding refresher training, and I have seen an uptick in questions about the training since reminders went out both last month and earlier this month. Everyone will have until December 31st. If for those people who do not complete it by that point, I will be turning off their permissions January 2nd when I'm back in the office. And then Anna and I will be presenting at ILA this upcoming Thursday. I believe our presentation is the 1 o'clock time slot, somewhere around there. And we'll be talking about Tony boxes and Yoto players and the cataloging process for those. We would love to see you if you're going to be at ILA. Okay. Jace, did I miss anything for sure?
I'll add a couple things. Recently, we held some town halls, the Share Finance and Policy Committee did, to discuss the member fee increases that are going to be implemented in fiscal year 2025. So if you didn't get a chance to attend those meetings, there is a recording on the Share website. And if you have any questions about that, you can go ahead and send me an email. In line with Aspen, there's going to be some trainings for the first cohort group that we have that are going to be going live at about mid-December. We've got a training on December 5th and on December 13th. Those are already on L2, so if you want to get registered on there, you can go ahead and do that. And if you want to, if I can also drop the links for those in the chat after this. This month, we're also doing the library crawl. So a couple Share staff members have already gone out to some libraries. I know Cassie stopped by some. I think, did you go out on one already, Jen?
I was supposed to yesterday, but I was at home, not feeling well.
Yeah. So cataloging staff are going out.
Staff did.
Me and Zach are going out towards the end of the month after ILA. And then speaking of ILA, hopefully we'll see you there. We've got a booth in the exhibit hall that'll be on Wednesday and Thursday. And then if you are going to be there on Tuesday night, there is a party for eRead Illinois from 5:30 to 7 in the North Terrace. As long as you're an attendee of the conference, you can go. There's no registration required or anything like that. And it's just a celebration of the 10th anniversary of eRead Illinois. So we're going to have some speakers there. I think they're just going to have like beer, wine, appetizers, that sort of thing. So come say hi. And then I know recently Cassie has gone to a couple libraries as well, like I said, for the library call, but she also had a presentation for ROE3, where she talked to a lot of school librarians, especially about IHLS, because some of them didn't even know what IHLS was. And then also what Share does on top of that. And then talking about the affiliate expansion program TriShare, where we've got one member that's currently in kind of like a pilot status for us. So we're testing things out, making sure things work. So that way, whenever we have more members as part of it, it's a little bit more streamlined. As far as anything else, I can't think of anything off the top of my head. So if I have missed anything, we'll circle back to it.
Yes. And Anna did just reach out to me. The presentation is on Thursday from 1:45 to 2:45.
Awesome.
Okay. So back to you, Donna.
Okay. Thank you very much for those updates. And my library isn't part of the first cohort, so I'm really excited. I actually showed it to my board, and they're very excited.
Good.
And I've been talking to my homeschooling parents who put a lot of holds on. So I'm hopeful that they will maybe be some of our testing people too. So
definitely.
I'm looking forward to it.
It looks amazing. Okay. You guys will love it.
I think so too. I think it's going to be really good. So the next item is new business, and we have the updated baseline policy statement.
Yes. So we had a situation arise. As many of you know, with the McNaughton program, when we started that program, we knew we'd have to bring in very good quality vendor records. We worked with McNaughton to develop those records so that they met our requirements. The plan was to bring those in and then overlay them if possible, or vice versa. We started out completely overlaying, no one ever knew. And then for some reason we kind of backed off of that, and someone found that we had vendor records in the database. So we've decided to bring this proposal forward, acknowledging that yes, there are some vendor records in our database, but they are restricted to Cloud Library and McNaughton Book Leasing because of the way they are set up. Our goal is still to overlay the McNaughton records as fast as possible, but if it doesn't happen, they are in there because of that reason. And the policy we sent out, you had the original one and then the addition of the statement and vendor records brought in by Share staff for the purposes of Cloud Library and the McNaughton Book Leasing program.
And that's question. Only addition.
Yes.
Addition. Okay.
You can just say it. It was me that
brought it. Okay. It was Jacob. Yeah. It was Jacob. Yes.
But they were nice looking records. Honestly, if you weren't looking at the 035, which I apparently was, you wouldn't have even known.
We worked very closely with them to get them as high.
Yeah. It was
possible.
Just that our baseline, like the very first thing that, when we started this, because really before you were only supposed to use that for on order or equipment records or locally created kits. That was about the only exceptions. And it was just, we needed to update it.
And I agree. It was time. And it will also help with people asking and be like, nope, this is what we do. This is the standards that we have put in place. This is why.
How many libraries use McNaughton Books?
I want to say we have 7.
7, okay.
Yes. And
so roughly how many items is that? I mean,
it is popular items.
Right, but how many, how many bibs do you think are out there, like roughly? Like 500? That's not up to 7?
No. I want to say maybe 30 to 50 a month, and then we are overlaying them as fast as possible. There are just times where it gets missed.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So it's not a huge number. The reason we had to do the vendor records was to ensure that the holds, when they came in, were placed correctly for those libraries to make sure they went to their correct library.
Right. Any other comments?
Sorry, Donna.
That's okay. Any other comments?
So when you say overlay, you're talking about like putting that on the regular bib record? Is that
so? Yeah, we'll merge the OCLC record with the McNaughton record so it has an OCLC number. But they come in as McNaughton, and sometimes it just staff wise, it doesn't happen immediately. We try our best to do it as fast as possible.
Yeah, what happened was I had like noticed it at first, and I was just going back in OCLC when I had the book in hand and bringing in, and it doesn't screw anything up. Mm-mm. But it was just like I brought it after like the fifth or sixth one, I brought it to Jen's attention, like asking, what's this? Because I saw that they were from Brodart. So.
Yeah. And originally they were supposed to be happening quickly, but things happen. We've had staff in and out. But this way it is clear that, yes, we know that they're in there. This is why, but we are overlaying as we can.
So theoretically, patrons who are putting holds on don't know that it's like a special program.
No, they would, unless they know what to look for, they'd have no way to know that it's a vendor record versus an OCLC record that hasn't been merged.
I think I just checked one out last night because the material type said leased.
Yeah.
Would that be one of them? As I was the first time I saw that, I was like, I feel like that has to be the book program. That was the first time I saw it.
And once they're merged, you would never know that it either started or it started as a vendor record. But we wanted to make sure that we didn't bring in absolutely horrible vendor records because we all know what they look like.
Right.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. Thanks. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Any other comments? I do notice that you're just doing the cloud and not anything from from OverDrive, and that's still the case?
As far as I know, OverDrive records are not being imported, but I could be wrong. And
I was just curious.
No, as far as I know.
With Aspen, I think we can blend. I asked that question specifically so that we could see our OverDrive and our cloud.
Understanding is that will be an API and it won't be directly in our catalog versus these going directly into it.
Okay. As long as it's more visible, that's cool with me.
It's essentially side loaded versus directly unloaded or imported.
Makes sense. Okay. Any other comments? I'll entertain a motion to, do we need to put this out for membership? It's just a minor change. I would think we could just vote on it.
That's nice.
Yeah, you're not doing a 360. You're just adding, adding this.
You're just adding context.
You're just adding stuff. You only have to, when you revise a policy, you only have to send it out to membership if you're doing a 360 and reversing it or making some kind of major drastic change. This isn't that. So
this All is right. formalizing a procedure.
Okay. Yep. So I would entertain a motion then to update our baseline policy statement.
I want to make that motion. I beat you, Jacob.
Okay, then I'll second it.
Thank you, Gwen and Jacob. She just wanted to have her name in the minutes, right?
Yep.
Absolutely.
All right. So a roll call vote, please.
Donna?
Yes.
Gwen?
Yes.
Emily? Oh, sorry, Lauren?
Yes.
Shauna?
Yes.
Jacob?
Yes.
Rachel?
Yes.
Jane? Carol?
Yes.
Okay. And Jay did put yes in the chat. Perfect. Just for the recording, sorry.
All right, thank you. Next up, adding URLs to bibliographic records.
Hey, Gwen, would you like to talk about this?
I'll try. It's been a while, so I'm not sure if I remember all the details, but we have this lovely new adult services librarian who has decided, and rightfully so, that all of our items that we have in our Madison County Genealogy Society collection, that it would be good to actually make it accessible to everybody. So he has been working on scanning a lot of the documents that we have that are, we bound ourselves. He is scanning them, and he would like to make them available to anybody anywhere using an URL. So I told him that I would look into if that is possible, if we can add those to the records. That is I have
a question. What site is he hosting those on? Is it a private site of Edwardsville, or is it?
I'm not sure where it would be, but the goal is for everything for it to be accessible to anybody.
Okay, anywhere. Like archive.org or something like that.
I'm not sure. I'm sorry.
Okay, I was just curious. Because okay. I also have a few things that I wouldn't mind sharing that way as well. So
I did this. We have some of our local hist, not very much, that's digitized, and it's hosted on our website. I did this. Let me. Because I kind of copied. I found something in OCLC and I copied the format that somebody else that did something like that had. But okay, let me see. The yearbook is, yeah, like I have the Rochester High School yearbook. Yeah, I have the 856 with the first indicator 4, second indicator 1. Then it's pretty much, yeah, like it's pretty much the example where you have the subfield 3 and it says digitized yearbooks, and then subfield U is the link to our website.
This is Lauren. We started this about 3 years ago when our genealogy librarian started digitizing things. It was a really good work from home pandemic project for me. So we've got over 350 items where we've added the URL into the BIB record. And Lacey gave me the numbers this morning. That has helped us hit over 35,000 views on archive.org. So if it's a thing, I would suggest doing it, but you have to make sure that it's, you know, nationally available to everyone, you know, that it's not a lockdown site. But Lacey puts them on archive.org. It's really, really well received. So Gwen, you know, if you want to chat about that, we can certainly do it, and also blame Lacey.
Wait, did you say they are actually in the records already?
Yeah, they are. They are. I can send you a list.
So we don't need a rule for that. Because we're doing it.
If we did, I didn't know to ask.
I would say we wouldn't need a the only reason I would say a policy might be good is so people that do it have it uniform in the formatting. Mm-hmm. That's the only reason. As far as is it allowable, of course. Yeah. I mean, apparently I've been doing it. Lauren's been doing it. There's probably other libraries.
I just followed the BIB standards. Yeah. I figured it was acceptable because it was in the BIB standards. Apologies if I needed to ask.
No, you're good. The main reason I was thinking along with Flynn's questions is to ensure that it is accessible by anyone.
That's why I asked about who was hosting. So yeah,
exactly.
Because we have a few things up in archive.org that eventually, you know, I'm kind of a one person show on the tech side of things. So eventually I'd like mine to be there too. So
definitely. So does the committee want a policy in place just to ensure that it is available to anyone? Like making that point very clear.
I don't think it's a bad idea to add it, especially if you just make sure that, you know, the BIB standards are being followed, you know, with the correct mark, you know, documentation there.
Okay. And then with the policy sent out with the recommended format and the additional examples, leave it up to libraries to choose what fits best as long as it's following BIB standards.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'm not sure this even needs to be in the policy, maybe just like an added
a best practice, maybe.
Well, no. No, this be in the policy, but what I'm about to say, I don't think needs to be in the policy. But if we're going to put it in the OCLC record, just make sure it's like something that's more specific to your community or your library kind of thing. Just because OCLC is a worldwide catalog. I mean, putting it in a share catalog, no problem at all. But just because I see this a lot in OCLC, especially with like the lesser common items, people tend to put notes in there that are more library or community specific and really shouldn't be in there because it's a worldwide catalog kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that needs to necessarily go in the policy. I think that just needs to be an add-on kind of thing to tell people.
Adding it to the checklist, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah.
That field, like.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
So will you make a draft of that for the next meeting?
I did send the draft. If there's any changes that anyone wants to make, otherwise it's ready.
Oh.
So I think it's good.
I must have just missed it. Sorry.
That's okay.
I think it looks good.
Okay.
So then we need a motion to accept our new URLs policy.
I make that motion.
Okay. And a second?
I'll second it.
Thank you, Gwen.
Okay.
Roll call vote.
Donna?
Yes.
Gwen?
Yes.
Lauren?
Yes.
Shauna?
Yes.
Jacob?
Yes.
Rachel?
Yes.
Jane? Yes, and Jane put yes in the chat, and then Carol.
Yes.
Okay.
Wonderful. Thank you. Additional local subject headings.
Yes. So I received an email from Scott Air Force Base, and they are having trouble finding books that are in open dyslexic font for patron. There is a current subject heading available, dyslexia friendly books, but they were wondering if we could add open dyslexic font to just help make it even easier for people. So proposing that one, if the committee does not want to add that, we can suggest a dyslexia friendly books and just hope that one day open dyslexic font is something that's added. The other ones, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Oh, what is open dyslexic font?
That was my question.
It is a font, and it's gonna, let me see if I can find it real quick. My apologies. Is it okay if I share my screen?
Sure.
Okay. Maybe. There it is.
Should have permission. Okay, cool.
Yeah, no, I'm having one of those moments. It's Friday, thank goodness.
Yes.
It's designed against some common symptoms of dyslexia. And so just looks slightly different, makes it easier to differentiate the letters. Okay.
My question is this something that catalogers would readily already know what it is? I mean, are they going to need a definition of it completely before you put it on their approved list?
We might. It might be where we need to also put a link to like the website. It is becoming more common. It's not mainstream just yet.
It will usually say it on the item.
That's good to know.
So you can buy specific books that is in this font. Okay.
Yes. Another option would be taking it to Seiko, to their medical subject funnel, and seeing if they'd be willing to pursue it, to either get it into Library of Congress or MeSH. That will take a lot longer though. But I'm fine with any of them.
Still keep dyslexia friendly books? Like that would still stay there, it'd just be adding this one in.
Yes. Yeah, just an additional way to help people find it.
I think it's a good idea, especially if it's on the item itself.
Okay.
So do we need a vote to approve adding this to our local subject headings then? Or can we just do that?
And there's five more.
Oh, there's five more. I'm so sorry.
I decided to bring them all today.
All right.
It's okay. So it's up to the committee if you'd like to vote on just this one or vote.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
We have seen an uptick in Wonder Books, Tony Boxes, Tony Figurines, Yoto Players, and Vox Books. They're not subject headings for any of these. Mm-hmm. And we already have several that are similar approved local subject headings. So we were wondering if we could just go ahead and add these as well.
I'm surprised by Wonderbook and the Yodo Players. Those are become, like the Yodo Players especially, are super popular now.
And yes, Yoto, we added one, a Neko, but that would not work as a subject heading in the right, in the correct way. Sorry about that. Chain of thought. So yes, Wonder Book, we do have other ones that are similar, but not just Wonder Book for that purpose.
Yeah, I can't keep our Wonder Books on the shelf. They're so popular. People love them.
They are. Yes. And I've seen, I know I received at least one email yesterday or today regarding more Tony figurines and other libraries sending in 35. We are seeing a huge uptick. And it would definitely help with finding in the catalog searching.
Now, well, with Aspen, since some of those are the same, would those records be kind of like, would they look like one when you're searching? Since it's going to include all types?
The way that Aspen searches in groups is based off title, author, and material type, not the subject headings.
Okay. So because, okay.
So it will help, though, if you say you're searching for Tony figurines, if you put that in, it will help. It just won't group them. Rather,
so those are the five. Do we have any more discussion? So I think we can just vote them all in at the same time, if that's okay with everybody. I'll entertain a motion for that.
I'll make the motion to approve the subject headings.
Thank you, Lauren. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Thank you, Rachel. Roll call vote, please. Okay.
Donna?
Yes.
Gwen?
Yes.
Lauren?
Yes.
Shauna?
Yes.
Jacob?
Yes.
Rachel?
Yes.
Jane? She put yes in the, no? Okay. She put yes in the chat. And then Carol?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. Okay.
Okay, thank you. All right, so new material type, young adult book.
So we had a request from a library to add a new material type, young adult book. My thought would be no, because that would fit better under collection code rather than a material type.
Which you already know how I feel about collection codes.
We're going to come back to collection codes. Don't worry. I have an update.
I have a question.
Yes.
I know this would definitely be useful when people are doing IPLR. Yes. So is there, I mean, if you do it by material type, you pull up that and you're trying to get the numbers that way, this would definitely be able to divide the items. Okay. So what's a reason not to do it? That to me seems like a very good reason to allow people to add that.
My question would be, what other young adult book related types do we have already? Is there a way to?
I am pulling up an item. We don't have any.
So there's not like young adult fiction or
no
nonfiction.
And the argument could be made that we have juvenile. Why not?
That's not what IPLR asks you about. It asks you to divide it.
Oh no, I know. I'm just saying that there's the case that we have juvenile. Why can't we also have young adult?
I am not one that uses material type to do my IPLR though, so I'm not quite sure. I have no problem with it.
Okay.
Unless it's a slippery slope and all of a sudden it's young adult audio, I don't know how much juvenile stuff is in there. I'm sorry. I don't know what the materials list looks like right now.
It is. I just had an item record open and it disappeared. Okay. I will share my screen again. Okay. So currently juvenile looks like that in material type.
Okay, so we've got a lot of definition there.
We do. Yeah.
So then the addition, so like there you had juvenile book, hardcover, juvenile book, softcover. So then would the idea be that those all three would be the same for young adults? So it's not like you're adding one, you're adding possibly it more, clarify.
Could be a slippery slope of we add a bunch of different material types.
Is there a juvenile graphic novel?
Yes.
So we definitely have young adult graphic novels that, you know, that would be something I would probably say, yeah, we need to do that. We have a lot of those. And then we have young adult manga as well. So.
Yeah. Could you scroll down to the young adult
section? There's none.
There is none. Period.
There's nothing for young adult. Yeah. Vinyl record. I'm honestly, I'm fine either way. So if it'll also have to, let me stop sharing. I'm hitting wrong buttons. We would have to also probably go to circulation with it. So if the committee would like to send forward a proposal to add material types for young adult, we can do that and see what they say.
I'm very much on the fence because, yeah, it seems like a great idea. Yeah, let's do it. But this is going to cause so many issues for, God, I'm having a brain fart. Dina. It is because she's, I mean, as administrative services, I mean, on the back end of Polaris, this is going to involve a lot of work for her.
Okay. And then Linda was asking, can someone explain the difference between collection code and material type? Collection codes can be as granular as they as requested, although we are having that discussion about too many collection codes right now, and can be assigned to specific libraries. Material types are available, are like system-wide. Everyone has the same material types, and they are definitely not as granular.
But they also control your circulation rules.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So material types are tied to bibliographic records, whereas helping define that, whereas collection codes can be specifically tied to specific item records, if that makes sense. No. Okay.
But also the material type is where your circulation rules are, you know, what your fine levels are. You can basically say, oh, my AV gets this fine rate versus that fine rate. On books. So it has a lot of back end stuff to it. And it is, if I'm remembering the administration portion of Share, it's very, very time consuming to add a group of them to every single library out there. So yes, it's a Dina Horton nightmare for her. Once it's done, is it useful and helpful on the other side of that? Yes, I can find all my young adult books, and I could maybe use material type for my IPLAR in the future.
And also to keep in mind, too, is we use that material type, but Polaris, unlike Horizon, breaks down is there is material type, fine code, and loan period. And those are all three separate things that all of the terms are 100% the same. But so she's going to have to do the same work three times.
Yeah.
Did we say what alternatives people have other than, I mean, like what could they do if we decided not to add these to material types? Is there another thing we can suggest to them to use?
Collection codes would be the next best option.
And they already exist for the most part in collection. Yes.
And those are very quickly and easily added. And we can do that on a library by library basis versus having to do major system-wide overhaul.
I would want to know more about how it relates to the IPLAR. I mean, I did the IPLAR once when I was the director at Arcola, but I don't quite remember that. I know there's a report that's sent out.
I do my own, and I base it on the collection code report that you can get monthly.
Right, and that's why I thought more of the collection issue for the IPLR.
Yeah, and, it, what you're and I have a spreadsheet that I put those numbers in because the IPLR is very specific. And that way, come June, I don't have to, you know, do an entire year. So I do it and I report that to my board. But as we've discussed in the past, and I think we're going to hit on old business, there's so many collection codes and they're so vague that sometimes you're just flat out guessing what the heck that item was that searched in your library. I don't know if going with specific material types reports, Gwen, have you seen the report using material type in regards to IPLR?
I have not seen it, but I've actually never had to fill out an IPLR.
Yeah. You don't. I mean, I've never used it based on material type.
I just forgot what the CAN report is titled.
Let me pull up.
Pretty sure it's item type by collection.
There is population by collection.
There is also the collection material type analysis, and that's what some libraries may be using.
There it is. I believe that's the one.
Well, and this is just a whole nother issue, but even though the state library has been told countless times, IPLR is written for a standalone library system. And that's why we have so many problems. It's a huge guessing game. It's not designed for libraries that are in a consortium setting.
I also find it kind of odd, ludicrous, whatever, that they rely a lot on those numbers. And a lot of it is us guessing what's coming through our desks, because there is no, when you've got a collection code that says general, you know.
Well, not only that, not only that, we in our system, we have so many schools, yes, their juvenile, what we would call juvenile fiction, has the fiction collection code.
Right.
So,
so you are categorizing, and I'll bet you I circulate a lot more young adult material than I know, because I don't know what's coming from those schools, because they're not defining it as young adult. They may be calling it high school or something, you know.
Or just fiction.
Or just fiction, yeah.
Yeah, so. And then that won't, if we have the material type for young adult, that doesn't mean they're even going to use it, though.
Right.
Either.
Because that would then be a lot of effort on our end to switch everything out. I mean, record sets, you know, but that's a lot, too. And then you'd have to change your templates. And
there's no guarantee people would do it.
Right.
So that other report choice that you mentioned is in the IPLR reports in place.
Yes. Yeah. And if there is a different report you need, or you need something specific, reach out to Dina and her team, and they can usually help get something gathered together.
Is there guidance? I've never had to do IPLR either. Do we have guidance somewhere for people to kind of
IPLR always attaches instructions.
Is it relevant? Like we said, is it relevant? Is it helpful for us with the way our system runs? Is there something that we can do? Someone can put something out.
There's a document. It's on the SHARE website that gives like instructions on how, okay, this report, you pull, this is how you pull this, or this stat that they want, sorry, you pull this report kind of thing.
Here you go. I'm putting the link in the chat.
All right. So what do we think we want to do with this discussion here?
Well, in this, the link she just shared, it specifically says collection material type analysis. So maybe more libraries.
Well, actually,
does say item circulation by collection as well. So libraries should be using both.
I mean, I really don't see any type of benefit from, it's not going to matter to the patrons, because if the patrons on the PAC side go to the advanced search, they're probably using collection, not material type anyway. so it's not going to benefit the patrons at all. And there's alternatives to do when you do that IPLAR stat via collection code, not by my vote's no.
Yeah, I always thought of those three codes as more like internal for us rather than like public.
You
like
can
collection is where that's being shown.
You can search by material type in the advanced search in the pack, but I just am trying to think like a patron, and I don't think one would. I think if they go that far, they would do by collection code.
And if they did do it by material type, they'd probably quickly learn why they didn't want to do it by material type.
Yeah.
Because you can still get the same results by doing audience, young adult, and then doing your book. Yeah, it's pretty 50-50.
I'd be happy to add it to the circulations agenda, or their committee's agenda, and see what they think. And if we need to bring it back to ours, we can.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Just maybe ask them what they think of it.
Do we know when their next meeting is?
Let me check.
We just met last week unofficially because we didn't meet quorum. The next meeting will be in December. I want to say the 14th or 15th. I believe it's the 15th. Give me one second. Sorry.
Oh, don't tell me it's the 15th. Okay.
14th. Sorry. We're good. You're good.
Thank you.
14th. Yep. Yeah, because we've got the Aspen training that day too.
Okay.
Or no, that's the 13th. Sorry.
Thank you. Thank you. 14th. I had to reschedule my kid's dentist appointment. And I'm like, oh no, not again.
Yeah, it's the 14th. So I'll make sure that we can definitely make sure that gets on the agenda.
Okay. Thank you. So I'd say for our committee, just table it till the next meeting.
Okay.
See what they said.
Sounds good.
Okay.
All right. What is Aspen mapping?
Let me think. Jace, do you remember?
I do not. I didn't get an email that said why we would add it to that, to the agenda. Do we want to table it for now, or?
Yes, and if it is something, I know Cassie talked to me about it, but I am completely blanking. Oh, sorry. Now I remember. Okay. So in Aspen, we have the option to hide certain circulation statuses. And we are wondering if the committee would be okay if we hid those. So things such as withdrawn, bindery, and repair. Just in those situations where you have your super user patrons who realize that something's been in repair for 3 weeks, they're like, when am I going to get this book? If we mask it, then no one's going to see it. And our circulation staff and frontline staff won't be getting those questions or harassed about it.
Mask it, because those get masked in the pack.
No.
Withdrawn does, at least.
No. Because sometimes I'll use the pack for searching because it's a lot faster and it's better than Leap. And you'll see it'll say status withdrawn or in repair. There. I mean, is that what you're talking about, right?
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Yeah. I'm fairly certain. I would have to find an example. I know in repair is.
I'm searching for one right now. Available. Yeah, it does show in repair. So how does the committee feel about us masking that in Aspen? So we hope maybe reduce questions or harassment from patrons. I know I've been repeatedly asked in the past about a book.
What would it say instead? Would it just not show up, or would it say unavailable? Or
my understanding, it would not show up.
Like, oh, that we could okay. even own it?
So it just look like we don't have it.
Exactly.
Hmm.
But the second you took it out of the status then and you said it was back on the shelf, then it would show it again.
Yes. As soon as it goes into a setting or a circulation status that isn't masked, it would show back up.
What if you were the only library that owned that copy?
I would imagine it also masked a bibliographic record.
So then no one could put a hole.
Or it would, or it might just show 0 out of 0 holds. Yeah. The bib would show up. Because I think in the cases of stuff where stuff doesn't show up in the pack, but the bib's still there. It shows the bib, but if you look at items that are there, it'll say just 0 available out of 0 copies.
Like a new record just brought in for a brand new book that no one's attached to yet.
Yeah.
I see that a lot. I run the hold report analysis because I like seeing what our patrons put on hold that either I don't own or, you know, it's on the way. Mm-hmm. The first thing I look for is where it says 0 items available or there's only 1 item available and my patron mm-hmm. has one on hold. And I always like seeing, you know, what's with that other item. And 9 times out of 10, the item has a status of withdrawn, like in and it's there or like in repair. And I'm calling those libraries and I'm asking like, can you just confirm that you know you do have the item or you don't? So would that like then help that problem of those patrons then not being able to like find those to put those on hold if they're not gonna show up theoretically?
You wouldn't be able to put a hold on them, and that might start the conversation of, oh, let's try to get it through other means, through OCLC.
Can't you still place a hold even if there's no item? Like it just comes up with a pop-up that says there's no items, but you can place a hold anyway.
On the staff side, you can override it. Yeah. But if a patron tries to do it from the pack, it won't let them.
Okay.
And it won't mask it on the staff side. We will still be able to see everything on ours. It'll just be on the patron side.
Okay.
So Aspen's going to have 2 different views?
Well, if you're placing the holds through Polaris or Leap, we won't be dealing with Aspen in that regard. So we'll still be able to see everything on our normal patron or staff area. If you're using the public side of Aspen, then you will see the same thing that they would see.
Wouldn't that be confusing for staff than having to explain, well, why is it showing up in one place and not the other? And
hopefully your patrons aren't using any of the staff side.
Yeah,
I meant like if a patron comes up and says like, do you have this item? And like we train our staff for general searching or larger searching, use the pack first. That'll help you in my mind, or there's better tools to narrow down your searches and find what you're looking for there. And then you copy over your title. Once you find it, put it in Leap and it'll come right up. And then you're placing the hold. So then they wouldn't be able to see that item exists, even though maybe it technically does on the staff side. And then they're like, well, why is it showing up here but not there? And then they're trying to have to explain to the patron.
I mean, if an item isn't like, you know, we don't have a copy available and somebody asks, then it would go to the point of, you know, maybe doing an outside system request. But I mean, they could still come up and be like, hey, I can't find this item. And then we look outside the system, if you know, so to speak, and it's there. You know what I'm saying? I feel like there's still situations where somebody would come up and ask about an item that they can't find, but we can find. I mean,
isn't that still more about staff training, Rachel, where you would just have to train your staff that they're going to see things on the staff side versus what the patrons see it?
Well, when you're going through library clerks every 3 months, it's really hard.
I actually understand that completely. I understand it completely. It just has to be done.
but I think the items too that like where I'm often having to run the in repair report to make sure that everything that's actually in repair is in repair, or did it get missed getting checked in and it's currently sitting on the shelf. So yeah, those weird instances. Yeah. Where the item is technically available, you know, someone just forgot.
And they might experience the same thing. If your library has Hoopla, OverDrive, Libby, anything like that, once we have Aspen, they're going to see that on the Aspen side. But if they go to staff client or lead, they're not going to see it.
Mm-hmm.
So same thing in reverse.
Well, that's
is it helpful for like if you do have that one item and it's in repair and somebody places a hold on it to kind of like let that library know, like, hey, somebody wants this, or hey, that, you know, there's demand for this item or whatever, you know, people are placing holds, they can't send it out. I mean, I don't know if it's a prompt for them to do something, or if they realize that, hey, this item has been in repair for 6 months and we're not going to be able to replace it, maybe they should like delete the record and get rid of the hold, or I don't know, something like that. I just don't know if it's helpful in that sense to have patrons be able to do that.
I have not been on the circulation side in a long time. If someone has an item in repair and someone places a hold on it, does it show up on the hold list?
Yes.
No. Well, maybe not the pick list, not but like that list. Report that I run, okay. It's still an active hold, even if there aren't any items fulfilling that.
Yeah. So if they're not running those lists, though, because I'm sure there's some libraries that aren't.
Well, if you're running your pick list, it only looks for the status of in.
Yeah.
So if it's not the status of in, then nothing else shows up. So, but again, there's reports that you can see in repair, et cetera, but a general circulation clerk would not see anything in a request like that.
Okay. And they're also, they may be pulling those other reports, but they may not be.
Right. Depends on, the level of what they're doing. But
yeah.
I don't have a problem necessarily keeping something like withdrawn, I think, is a different status than in repair. In repair seems to me to be like, hey, we're going to try.
Okay.
But I've got a couple of playaways, like they're damaged, and I'm waiting for the playaway people to send me another copy, kind of thing. And once I get that, it will go back on my shelf.
Okay.
I just think withdrawn means, I don't even know why people use the status of withdrawn too terribly much.
Yeah.
Well, we do, but I delete if those monthly. I delete those monthly, but there's lots of ways people use withdrawn, but I think there is a lot of libraries, or I don't know if I would say a lot, but some that kind of don't realize that withdrawn's kind of the in-between status.
Of deletion versus...
And we have stuff that's been withdrawn for years because libraries didn't realize that you have to kind of delete it for it to go away.
Withdrawn is used over here for stats. How else do you know what you're getting rid of if you don't put it in some status? Because when you delete it, it's completely gone.
On your statistical summary report, it shows how many items you added and deleted that month.
And sometimes we have items that aren't actually real that we do that with. And so that stat doesn't work for us. We need to actually have real items. And withdrawn allows us to account that. But on a monthly basis, we delete our withdrawn items.
Yeah. Withdrawn has its purpose, and we use it, as I said. It's just, we all know that there are items in Polaris that have been withdrawn for years.
Yeah. I'm not debating whether or not you should use it. I'm just saying, could we maybe suppress withdrawn in the Aspen product versus in repair?
Yeah, I would keep in repair personally.
Okay.
I've never had anyone coming and saying, well, why has this been in repair for 2 weeks? I don't know if that's a common thing, but I've never had someone complaining.
I'm glad you have it. It was not fun.
So what was the other statuses that you were looking to submit?
Withdrawn missing and lost.
Missing and lost.
Yeah.
But lost can be temporary.
And so can missing. Because we found one the other day.
my only two would be bindery and withdrawn. I don't even know what bindery should be used for. Is that
that would be serials, publications usually would go to binderies, or people who are having items that didn't come with library covers put on.
Interesting.
That would be something like our genealogy collection,
mm-hmm.
Where we would take like our Madison County news letter, they get bound. And so we would take them off and put them in that status. We haven't used it in years, but that would be where that would fall for us.
In my mind, that kind of equates to in repair.
Mm-hmm. Or unavailable. Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So withdrawn and then.
Yeah.
And if they are mass and aspen, say for missing and lost, when they show up again, you put them in and they're back.
Yeah. I mean, unavailable's just there because it's kind of like none of the above fits, but it's not available for circulation. So it's there mm-hmm. as kind of a whatever the other reason it's not in circulation, but nothing else fits.
I do think maybe the status of missing or lost is useful to a patron, especially if it's the only person that owns it, because then, you know, at least they know, oh, well, somebody did have it, you know, but right now it's lost, et cetera. But I think there's just statuses that are just in different categories for my brain mm-hmm. anyway. So if I was a patron, I think I would not care about something that's been withdrawn or is in a bindery because I wouldn't know what that meant mm-hmm. and or unavailable. But in repair, missing and lost, I can at least understand that. So
yeah, I just use the pack so much, even from the staff side. And I like seeing those statuses.
And we also don't have to mask any of them. I believe this will also go to circulation as well.
Yeah.
I mean, I think after this discussion, the only one I would mask would be withdrawn. Okay. And that's just because while other libraries use it for different reasons, I would say majority of us, it's the step before deletion.
It's purgatory.
Yeah, it's purgatory. Yeah, it's essentially, it's the library version of purgatory. I love that analogy.
Well said. Well said.
Yeah. Because even unavailable can be temporary. I, you know, sometimes use that for like my DVD cover project where I had to throw one out and I'm just waiting for a new one to come in. And it's like, I could put it in repair, but I don't want the staff to be confused because it's not in the repair bin. It's on my desk.
Or we've used it like, accidentally checked an item in before its release date mm-hmm, yeah. and didn't have a hold, thank God. But it was like, oops. Well, you can't put, I mean, once it's checked out, you can't put it back into in process. No. So we've used it for that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So overall, right. What I'm hearing is withdrawn is the only one that we would as a group suppress. So maybe we make that as our recommendation to circulation when they start their discussion.
Sounds good. Yeah. I can do that.
What do you, is everybody in agreement with that? I was just trying to summarize.
I agree.
Agreed.
Yep.
Okay. So that would be the committee's view on it at this time. Okay.
All right. We will pass that on to CERC.
Any other topics under new business? Okay, hearing nothing, then our old business is collection codes.
Yay, everyone's favorite topic. So we ran a list of all our collections and the number of items, templates, or acquisition modules, parts associated with them. And we went through and removed 246 collection codes that were not associated with anything. We could have done a little bit more. However, we came across 19 that were associated with some part of a record from 14 libraries. And I'll be reaching out to those libraries individually to see what we can, if it's something they're still using, what we can do to remove it. So we are down to 961 items or collection codes. The next step would be to go to the records or the collection codes that have maybe five or less items or templates associated with them and start looking through those and seeing if it's something that could also be deleted. I'm working on a letter to go to those libraries to talk, see if we can start that conversation with them.
That's awesome. Thank you, Jennifer, for
of course
doing that. That makes my little collection cataloging yes. heart happy.
Yes, it will be good. We will get it down.
Especially before moving to Aspen, you know. I mean, yes. not like Aspen's a clean slate, but it's just an opportunity to make everything exactly. as neat and organized as we can.
Yes, you know? I agree.
And so maybe in those discussions, you could encourage them to pick a collection code that's more specific rather than so general. That would be fantastic.
Yes, yes. That is the plan, and try to make them fit into ones that we already have. I did have, just to be very open, we did have to add a few new collection codes based around languages. Some libraries were getting some unique languages. It's like, yeah,
that's understandable.
You need
something for that.
Yeah, that's
you just don't need 15 audiobook
versions.
No. They're all the same.
That or the cassettes.
Oh, sure.
I deleted quite a few cassette collection codes.
I would also think that would help your back end process, you know, kind of, you know, just not make the system process that kind of stuff, you mm-hmm. know. It just helps. Exactly. It just yeah. helps. Okay. Wonderful. All
right. So hopefully the next chunk will take off some more and we will be at a good place.
Good. All right. Any other old business? All right. We do have a few people from the public online. Do we have any public comment? Okay, nothing in chat. All right, any announcements?
I do have one announcement. It wasn't technically a share update, so I didn't want to include it then. But as you all probably know, the emergency order for COVID ended back in May. And that ending has changed the ways in which we're allowed to meet quorum for committee meetings and boards and everything like that. So Cassie's a little bit better at explaining it than I am, but the general consensus is if committee members are not meeting or joining a meeting virtually in a public space, they cannot be counted towards quorum. So for example, not to pick on you, Donna, but because you're working from home, mm-hmm. technically doesn't count towards quorum. So what IHLS is doing after talking with our lawyer and legal teams and everything like that, is we will have to list the committee members' locations of their public libraries as a meeting space for the meeting. You can join virtually from there, and that still counts towards quorum, but you can't join from a space that is not public.
It makes sense. In my brain, it actually does make sense.
Yeah, yeah. So that's just a minor change that we'll have going forward. I am not clear on whether or not, if you are participating from home, whether or not, because you're not getting counted towards quorum, I'm not clear on whether or not you'll be able to be counted for votes or anything like that. So I will get clarification on that as soon as possible, and let you all know that. But going forward, it sounds like I will be adding your library's locations to our agenda for the location, just to make everyone aware.
What's the number for quorum?
For this committee, it is
five.
I think it's five, yeah.
However, I have an update regarding that.
Okay.
If you're done, Jace.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. I received an email, and she's not here. I hate that I have to announce it for her. Jane is retiring at the end of the year, and this is her last meeting.
Aww.
So we will be down to 8 members.
Okay.
So if anyone knows of anyone who might be interested, we can start that process of adding another person.
And I am not adverse to going into my office to do this meeting. So, I mean, if that's going to make quorum, I mean, you know, because we need to be able to move forward. So, I mean, it's only quarterly. It's not like it's every Friday I'd have to drive to work, you know, something.
Do we have to, tell that in advance? So that we know if we're going to meet quorum before the meeting?
It would definitely be preferable, just because than if people are planning on working from home and are coming specifically, and like you said, Donna, to go to this meeting or attend it virtually. That way we're not wasting people's drive time and everything like that. But I would say typically I think we need about, 48 hours or something for cancellation on meetings or something like that.
Yeah.
There's a time frame. So as long as we know by that time frame, I can make things happen. So if you know you're not going to attend, let me know as soon as you do. And we can go from there.
Okay.
Cool. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. So our next meeting is going to be Friday, January 19th of 2024. That's amazing.
Crazy.
At 10 a.m. I don't know why I got it in my head today. It was 10:30. Anyway, 10 a.m. And is there anything else that we need to talk about? All right, so our adjournment is at 11:07 a.m.
Thanks, everyone. Have a wonderful weekend, and we hope to see you next week at ILA.
Bye.